talk to your own children? Could you tell them?
Oh, but definitely.
When did you start speaking to them?
To my children?
Yes.
Way back when my youngest son was in college.
When was he born?
He was born 55.
Okay.
He's going to be 60 now. I started when they were very young. Only I was the survivor. My son, my husband was not. I mean, he came here early. But he heard it. We had the Czech girls coming to my house, the Viennese people coming to the house. The house was full of what happened. So they could not escape it. Oh, but all the girls were from my hometown. So when we served the dumplings, of course they knew, oh, and what did we eat? And remember what we did when we were so starved, we were sitting in Auschwitz and talking about the knödel, the dumplings, because that kept us happy. Well, my son wrote an essay about my life, and he went to Manhattan College, which was a Catholic school. One day I get a call from the priest, Father Batyushka, and he said, Mrs. Altman, I have a request to you. Your son wrote the most magnificent essay about your experience. Would you mind if I lecture on it? I said, no, by all means. Just don't mention my name, otherwise I'll get called from all over the world. And he did. He did lecture on the essay of Steve's paper.
So this is like in the mid-70s?
Yes.
Because it's close to the time when people are now willing to speak.
Exactly. I mentioned that when I came here.
But you were speaking about it well before.
But they didn't want to hear. In fact, you remember I mentioned the family cantor, right? Mm-hmm. I came to this country and I said to my brother, Bernard, I got to call Mrs. Cantor. Mrs. Cantor, it's light. Mrs. Cantor had a sister in New York, and I spoke English and wrote English, so I wrote to Mrs. Cantor in English to send her $5. So she said, so my brother said, Judy, you're out of your mind. Look at Mrs. Cantor in New York. There must be thousands of them to call. I'm not giving up. I called Mrs. Cantor. Did you have a sister in Yasina? Bang, bang, bang. I found one. Yes, I had a sister, Shandl, in Yasina. Oh, let me tell you, I'm not interested. I said, I don't want anything. All I want to tell, bang. I didn't give up. I called again. Mrs. Cantor, all I want to tell you, that she had 6 children and none of them survived. I don't want to tell anything. I just want to tell you, one boy was an Einstein. He was so brilliant. He was in mathematics in 12 years of age. The teacher said that this guy is going to be unbelievable. He had a gift. I just want to tell you about one was as beautiful as Sophia Loren, gorgeous. I am not interested. I said, why aren't you interested? Wouldn't listen. So people did not listen.
So I just had a few questions.
Please.
From, let's say, about maybe 1935 or so to 39.
Yeah.
You were, say, 11 to 15 years old.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit more about some of your friends and what you were doing, the activities,
okay,
just how life was for a teenage girl?
Oh, it was just wonderful. First of all, you didn't lack anything. You had warm, beautiful clothes. You had a bicycle. I went to school on skis. I went to school on a horseback because we lived 6 kilometers from town. So to get to my Czech school, it was an hour walk. Or the horse. So I had a horse. I had a beautiful horse, a big brown horse with a white diamond. So, and the weather was bad, was raining. So I took the horse with a saddle, and we came. Not only I, there were 2 Czech boys. They too came on horseback. So we tied the horse to the near the in front of the school and gave them the oats. And the kids came out to play with the horse, or we went on bicycle, or we went on skis, or if it is so bad, then my father put on the horses with a sled and brought all of us to school. But when we had domácí cvičenie, which we had a whole full day of school, we came, it was dark. So we had to walk home when it was dark. But the wolves came across. But the wolves, when you light, when you have a battery, a light, then if he sees the light, he'll run away. And there was one part of the 6 kilometers where there was no houses, about 1 kilometer or more. No house on each side. And we were three, the two boys and me. So we walked, but we had that flashlight in order to see when the... And we walked and we sang and we had a good time. The peasants lived... They were not wealthy people. But I have a very interesting book that I just read last night about the peasants in that town. They were Ruthenians. They were called Ruthenians. Now, what they had, they were property rich but money poor. They had lots of property. They had two or three cows. And that's how they maintained their livelihood. The men... Yasina was predominantly a lot of trees. So what happened? They cut the trees, and they send the trees down on a raft to Hungary or to Czechoslovakia, where it was used for paper. So that's how the men derived their livelihood. In the winter, they lived from selling the butter and selling cheese and all that. And they liked to drink. Those that could afford to buy, well, incidentally, my father had a general store and a tobacco and a liquor. So you could come, you came into our place, you bought everything, including a meal that my mother cooked. So... it was a very lively home. And Sunday, the peasants came and they shopped for the whole week. Flour, sugar, honey, and all that. And we all, whoever, most of them were married, only Manny and I, we were not married. We had to help in the store to help feed, to help the... to fill the orders for the people. And of course, Saturday, we were very observant. We closed. But if you had a tobacco store, you had to sell tobacco. That was part of the, that was the law. So we had a woman, and she was selling it through the window. Not the liquor. Liquor didn't have to be sold on Saturday, but the tobacco had to be sold.
Now, did you have a particular girlfriend, like your best friend?
Oh, yes, indeed. I had three. I had Olga, Viera, these were the Czech girls, and I had one Hungarian girl, Margot. The Czech girls, we had about 4 kilometers to walk. But they invited me for Christmas, and I invited them for Passover. And of course, my father, they were strictly, they observed the kashrut. But I did too, in fact. But my father was a modern Orthodox person. I remember my brother came home on Erev Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is one of the holiest days at night. And he came like 10 o'clock at night. And you're not eating anymore on the day before Yom Kippur. So I remember my father said, but of course he can't fast without, let him eat. My mother said, okay, he can eat at 10 o'clock at night, which was out of... Oh, in that, again, that other family, the one, the deaf and mute man, I must have been 6 years old, and I played they were my friends as well. But they were so poor. They had no bread all week, only porridge. But what my mother gave them bread every day, and for Shabbat, my mother baked a big challah for them. And one day on Saturday, my parents went to to temple, and then they lie down for the afternoon, and I went to play. And what we were playing, drugstore. And I tore a piece of paper. And a man came, and he couldn't speak. And he saw me tear a piece of paper. That's a no-no on Shabbat. And he said, I'll go to heaven. I'm dying. So I ran home, and I banged on my parents' door. I said, Papa, I'm going to die. He said, no, Judy, you're not going to. Yes, I'm going to die, because Shmuel said I'm going to die. I tore a piece of paper.
How did you come to learn so many languages?
Okay. Now, my parents were very, very important to learn knowledge, period. So I had a German teacher from the age of 5 or 6. I had an English teacher when I was about 12 years old. My mother was Hungarian, so I learned the Hungarian. Czech was my native language. Yiddish my father spoke. Russian was part the secondary language in school. So in Polish I learned when I went to my sister's house. So these are the languages that, and I have an easy ear for languages. So when I came to Sweden, there was no problem. I learned it very fast.
When you were, when your father was saying to you that he wanted you to do the Kinder transport, how old were you then?
I was 14.
Okay, so you're 14. Most 14-year-olds don't necessarily get to tell the parents, I'm staying. I'm the last one, so I'm staying. How did that
conversation? I adored my father. I adored him to no end. And I saw my mother's bitterness. I saw how she was suffering with hearing the news about Charlotte. I said, I cannot leave them. I cannot do that. I couldn't do it. No way.
Do you have any, when you look back on that, knowing what you then endured, do you have any regrets?
None whatsoever. None whatsoever. Because I was there to the last minute. I was there to comfort them.
And it sounded like how your father, you know, gave you sort of the blessing right at the end.
That blessing kept me all the time. Because
he still does today.
Indeed. Because he said, I will live. Papa said, he was a very learned man. He read Spengler there already in German. He really could have been a rabbi, but he chose to be a businessman because it was more profitable.
I have a couple more date questions. You mentioned May 21st as part of the
to Auschwitz.
Yeah. What year was that?
44.
Okay, that wasn't 44. Okay. And Bergen-Belsen?
45. 45.
Okay, and
It was April, I think. Yeah.
Do you know the date, the British soldiers, that they came and liberated you?
Oh, yes, the 15th. I think that was the 15th. The 15th of April, that the British. Oh, incidentally, I wrote letters to my brother to the Bronx from Bergen-Belsen. And I remember the name Rochambeau Avenue, and I remember 3133, but I did not, I know, I thought all the United States is Brooklyn. And I kept writing Brooklyn, and it kept coming back. Until finally, one British soldier said, give me the letter. He gave it to the British Red Cross. They gave it to the American Red Cross. And I finally got the letter to my brother.